We're talking with Dr. Jan Leach. She's the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Agricultural Sciences at Colorado State University about the exciting work that's being done here at the university. Dr. Leach, what's going on here on campus that's going to advance research for the next decade or two?
So in terms of genome editing, there are several projects going on around the campus. In our laboratory, we're trying to understand disease resistance in rice and the genes that are involved in helping rice resist pathogens when they try to attack. So what we're doing is using the genome editing technologies to mutate the gene, to knock it out, so that we can then ask, if we knock this gene out, do the plants become more susceptible? That tells us that that gene is important in resistance. In other cases, we're trying to build resistance by changing the gene just slightly. So in another case, we'll change the promoter of a gene. So the promoter is a piece of DNA in front of a gene that tells the gene when to turn on and turn off. And if we change it so that it turns it on more highly or more rapidly, then we can enhance resistance in that way. We use it in my laboratory predominantly as a research tool to ask questions about genes that may or may not play roles in resistance. And then we can tell the breeders, this is an important gene that you need to introduce into a rice variety or another plant, and it will help that plant be more resistant to pathogens. The other alternative is that we could edit the gene directly in the cultivar that's going to market. But at this point in time, we're not sure that will be acceptable to the public. We really use it for research purposes.
So with CRISPR-Cas9, you can go into the genes of a plant and remove something. You can heighten something. Can you actually add a sequence?
Yes, you can. That's the hardest thing to do, in fact, by genome editing. For whatever reason, biologically, it's hard to do. But you can do that. And in fact, we try to do that as well in our research. We try to add elements into the promoters that make the promoter more active. We're much better at taking things out than we are at adding things. When we think about how to improve plants, we usually try to mimic what can be found in nature. Like, the reason we're trying to turn these genes on to higher levels is because we've shown in past research that heightened activity of these genes enhances resistance. Nature's already done it. We're just trying to make it happen in the varieties that we send to the table instead of the wild varieties.
About C4 rice. Is this something that your lab's working on?
We are not working on C4 rice, but I work a lot with the International Rice Research Institute in the Philippines. That is one of the projects that they are heavily involved in. What that should do is it should make the rice more efficient at making energy and capturing the energy from the sunlight and making it more productive. It's a long shot, and it's a long-term project because it's not just one gene. It's many genes that are involved in that pathway. So you have to change many things. Now, in fact, rice has most of the genes that are involved in the pathway to C4, but they are expressed differently. We come back to the promoters, the things that turn the genes on and drive the genes. So you need to tell those promoters to turn those genes on at a particular point in development, and that's pretty complicated to do that with multiple genes.
I've also read about efforts to turn some of these cereal crops from being seasonal plants to actually being perennial. Is that something that could be done through CRISPR-Cas9?
If we understood the genes that tell a plant whether to be a perennial or an annual, the reason that folks want to do that is because every year you don't have to go in and plant, you don't have to plow up the fields between the plantings, and you don't have to buy seed every year. I'm a little bit concerned about that kind of a strategy, and I'll tell you why. In rice, there are perennial rices, but they're weeds. So think about it. You would have to be very careful in how you did this. If you turn an annual into a perennial, one that grows like grass, think about it could spread. You'd have to figure out how to control it. And the other problem that would have to be overcome is that in the perennial rices, for example, that exist, they're good for a while, but they're not really going to last forever. They're not like a tree that keeps on going. You really need to replant them after a while. Also, sometimes when you have a perennial, it doesn't produce as well as an annual.
I've also read about golden rice adding a vitamin A component to a not particularly nutritious delicious cereal. What do you think of that?
It really does make a difference. The initial constructs that they use, the initial plants that they developed, the vitamin A wasn't as available to the body. But now with newer constructs, they've gone in and redone this whole thing. And now it's much more available. It's much more healthy. But they're still struggling to get it released into the public.
I look at the history of agriculture and how through selective breeding for thousands of years, and then more recently using radiation, and now with CRISPR-Cas9, I feel excited about the potential. But it seems to me that there are some folks that are worried about unintended consequences. How do we address that?
It's a really difficult question to address because a scientist can never say never, because my reputation hinges on my honesty and knowing that anything is possible. Anything can happen. Mutations occur. The problem for a scientist is if you ask me if I edited a plant to make it more resistant to a disease, could there be a downstream problem that I didn't predict? Of course there could be. It could become more susceptible to another pathogen. Or it could, by changing its disease resistance for whatever reason, become less resistant to drought. So what we can do is test as many of the parameters as we can, but there always will be unpredictable things that you can't promise won't happen. My take on it, though, is that in all the years with GMO technology, that we've had GMOs on the market and people have been consuming them, we've been making medicines with them, in all these years, we've really never seen a negative consequence in a genetically modified plant.
I think that what's at stake if we don't do this is not always communicated. The fact that there are people who are still at risk of starvation in parts of the world, it seems to me that we need to communicate the value more clearly. What is the value of what you're doing?
The value is that with the 9 billion people coming on the planet in the near future, we have a lot more mouths to feed, and we need to feed them not only calories, we need to feed them nutritious foods, and we need to feed them foods that taste good, that they won't waste. We need much more cereal production. We know that we need to increase the production of rice, for example, by something like 50% in order to keep up with the demands of people in the developing world in particular, where the poorest of the poor live. So if we don't move faster, we may not be able to keep up with the demands. The other side of that is that if we ignore this technology, we're really putting ourselves at risk. In fact, I was talking to one of our plant breeders the other day, and they have done a spectacular job of improving our crops like wheat and rice, a truly spectacular job. But he was telling me it's harder and harder to get yield gains, to increase the amount of yield, because in bringing in things from wild resources, they've almost reached the potential. It's harder and harder to find those genes that will improve things. So now we need another tool to help us get over that. Some of us call it the second green revolution. We need to have that chance of getting a much higher yield, much better quality, much healthier foods, and to ignore a technology because we think there's risk, because we're well fed and we don't need it so much, is really not a very humane way to look at things.
How is CRISPR-Cas9 superior to earlier genetic technology?
The beauty of CRISPR-Cas technology, or genome editing in general, is that you make very precise changes. So for example, think about if you're typing on your computer and you make a mistake and misspell a word, you back up and you erase one or two letters, and then you go forward. With CRISPR-Cas, you can edit one or two letters in the genome, or you can delete a word or a sentence if you want to. But it's very precise. In plant breeding or in other GMO technologies, the precision is not there.
What's the next frontier in using CRISPR?
I think two things that are going to happen in the near future. Instead of just making a single change to a single gene, but very precisely, they can make changes in several genes in the genome very precisely. That means that we can change an entire pathway or process in a plant. The other one is, I like to call it genome-wide editing. It's a similar concept, but if we know in that promoter that I talked about earlier that drives the gene, tells the gene when to turn on and turn off. If we know that there are elements in that promoter that are common to genes that are turned on and off at the same time, co-regulated, we say. We could, with one construct, change multiple genes so they're turned on at the right time when a pathogen comes into the plant, let's say, or when the plant senses stress or high temperature, turn on several genes and really protect that plant. The genome-wide editing is a little bit pie in the sky still, but I think it's something that we can think of in the future.
Sounds to me that with climate change, where you may have heat waves, that affects how rice grows, that genome-wide editing could help that plant respond to various stresses in one season.
That's in fact what we're looking for, is we want to find those changes that we could make that would improve the plant in multiple locations. And we know that those exist in nature. Now we want to try to figure out, can we help improve a plant that is good for eating without making it weedy, and improve its quality and its durability, its ability to respond to stress, its ability to adapt to changes that are happening all the time. A 1 degree change in nighttime temperature, which is what they're measuring in Asia, affects rice yield, and it's already having negative impacts on rice yield. So we know that we need to think about how can we adapt rice for a changing climate.
I know that you focus on rice and plants. We're in the plant building as we speak. Is CRISPR being used with animal sciences here at CSU?
It's used in animal sciences in a very interesting way. It's not the animals themselves, but it's a food safety issue. So human pathogens contaminate food. If you read the newspaper yesterday, you saw that JBS had to destroy 6.5 million pounds of meat because of salmonella contamination. So one of our young faculty in animal sciences is using CRISPR-Cas to inactivate very specifically certain microbe contaminants in food.
How long has CRISPR been around, and what else is going to come out of this?
It's an ancient system that was developed by bacteria to protect their own genomes from infection by viruses. So what they did, these bacteria, is they picked up a piece of the virus and inserted it in their genome in these CRISPR elements. And so now when the virus comes in, the bacteria recognizes it and destroys it, in a sense. So it's like an immune system for bacteria. So it turns out there are multiple systems that are out there, and more are coming to the table. And the nice thing is that they have unique attributes, and they will enable us to extend what we do even further.
I think that's really exciting. So there's actually a whole sort of toolkit that we are taking from bacteria that will allow us to make food that is safer, more nutritious, more drought resistant. The end goal here really is to make sure that there is more food for more human beings and to be able to confront those challenges of a 9 billion person planet.
Mm-hmm. And we have to work fast. They're saying 2050. Think about how many crop seasons that is away from us.
Not enough time to do it the old-fashioned way, that's for sure.
Not anymore, yeah.
Rice, wheat, pathogens for food production. What else is CSU working on?
Are you familiar with gene drive? Think about malaria, and it's transmitted by insects. So what they're doing is they're introducing, and this isn't necessarily at CSU, but at other places, they're introducing into the insect a gene that will not enable it to pick up the pathogen, the human pathogen. But what you can't just get it in one insect. You've got to drive it through the population. A gene drive is where you introduce a change, but you want it to pass through the population. You want it, as the mosquitoes multiply, you want it to move through the population in order to make all the mosquitoes unable to pick it up. Those sorts of experiments need to be thought through carefully, because we don't know enough about. If you release that insect into an ecosystem, the birds don't have something to eat. So what does that change? If you eliminate an insect from a population, which some of us would love to eliminate mosquitoes from the population, but they play a role in the ecosystem. And we don't understand yet what the implications are of eliminating insects from the population, because they're food for something. So those are sorts of experiments that it's very important for us to begin to ask those questions. What is the ecosystem consequence of a change that I make? What is the ecosystem consequence of me editing rice? Even if I make the rice more resistant to disease, what's the consequence of that? Fascinating questions, and we don't know the answers, but I would say in the case of a disease-resistant rice, because we do it by breeding all the time, that the risk is probably quite small.
Well, in this case, the risk may be well worth it. Nothing is without risk.
Nothing is without risk. That's absolutely correct.
But ensuring that human beings can eat, it seems to me that the cost of inaction is greater. Are there other ethical questions that you consider in the course of your work?
Yes, because while I try to make changes in the crop plants for good, you can imagine that someone might try to take that same change and turn it into something bad. Understanding, for example, how to modify the expression of a gene, you can do a lot of things if you understand how to do that. You can do good things and you can do bad things, just like you can do good and bad things with a computer or good and bad things with anything. So one of the things that we're now asked to assess in a university situation is, what are the possibilities? They call it dual-use research of concern. What is the possibility that someone could take your research and do bad things with it? So we have to address to a bioethics committee why it is that what we're doing is safe and that we don't think that someone could take it to do evil things with.
What can scientists do better to communicate the good that is possible from gene editing?
You know, we talk about that a lot on campus. And, as you know, some people are great communicators and great communicators with the public, and other people are not. But we need to build up a cadre of scientists that are good communicators, that understand deeply the technology and can discuss in an even-mannered way with the public the safety, discuss the risks and the possible risks, but emphasize the positive sides of doing these things, but in fairness, weigh the risks and the positives with it. We need to better educate our students to do that. We need to better educate our students to talk to policymakers, to go to Washington and say, we need this, and this is why we need it, in very clear and understandable language.
We've been talking with Dr. Jan Leach. She is the Associate Dean for Research at the College of Agricultural Sciences at Colorado State University. Thank you so much for taking some time.
Thank you. It's been fun.